Okay. We're taping, today is February 26th, and we're starting Koheles. And the first thing I'd like to say is that in Chazal, the status of Koheles was questioned. There are some Tanaim who felt that Koheles does not belong in Tanakh. The terminology they used to use was Mitame Eseyadayim, based on Gemara and Shabbos, Daf Yud Gimel, that says that they would store their truma with Sfarim of Tanakh, and to convince the people not to do so, they would go there in the Sechet Yadayim that the Sfarim of Tanakh are Metame, so to keep them from storing books of Tanakh with truma. So if a book is Metame as Yadayim, so that means it's part of Tanakh. If it's not Metame as Yadayim, so that means it's not Tanakh. So when the Mishnah says that Koheles is mechumrei beis Hillel umekulei beis Shammai, so you know what that means. It means beis Shammai thinks Koheles is not part of Tanakh. It's a kula. If you accidentally stored your truma with your Koheles, so beis Shammai would say you don't have to destroy it. Beis Hillel would say you do. So it's a kula of beis Shammai. So why was Koheles's canonicity questioned? So there are three reasons given in Chazal. One, in Vayikra Rabba, it says, Dvarav notin leminus. The words of Koheles can possibly drive someone to heresy. So the Meiri, in his commentary to Koheles, points to the place where Chazal were mamish referring to, which is at the end of Perek Gimel, where he says, who knows, mi odea, if the spirit of a human being and the spirit of a behema go to different places when they die. Which is absolute kfira. He's wondering whether the human being has a ruach that's any different than a behema. Yeah, it's a very, very, very punishing existence if with all of our tzaras, we just disappear like an animal at the end of it all. Right? So how could you say such a thing in Tanakh? So two answers to that question are given in Chazal. One is that he entertains such a thought. He does not conclude such a thought. There's no heresy in entertaining questions. Well, maybe does a Kodesh Baruch Hu have a Masige Haguf and a Dimyon? And then you think it over, you roll it over in your head, and you conclude, no, he doesn't have a Guf. But just entertaining the possibility is not heresy. So entertaining the possibility that we end up like this, like the animal, like Koheles does in Perek Gimel, is not the conclusion of the book. The conclusion of the book is Sof Davar, Kol Nishma, Selukim Yiroh. Okay, so, but the Meiri in his parish to Koheles says that if you see in this Sefer the problem of Tzadik Varala, Rosh Vatovlo, and the human existential problems of our existence, does not have the conclusion that you find in Chazal readily, which is that the tzaddikim get all their onesh in this world, and they get their schar in the next world, and Rishayim the way they want it. They want all their schar now, like Esav. He's living for the moment. He doesn't care about the future. So that's the answer Chazal generally give to the suffering of the tzaddik. But Koheles does not work at all with that. This is the terminology that Meiri uses. Koheles uses betorat hamechkar. He uses empirical evidence, and since we don't have empirical evidence of tchias hameisim in olam haba, empirical evidence means like you can test, you know, right? So it's a matter of emuna. Okay, we have emuna shlema that exists, and there are indications in Koheles that he also has such emuna, but he doesn't use it as a solution to the problems of our existence. He doesn't use it because he can't prove it. So it doesn't enter the framework of this Sefer. Yeshayahu talks about this, Daniel talks about Yecheskel, but Koheles will not. Okay? So I want to start with that because that's the real ikar point of Koheles is the problems that the Kodesh Baruch Hu makes promises. There should be some kind of response that's somehow commensurate to the promises. Now, Koheles is certainly not the only person in Tanakh to deal with this. When Avraham says, "Hashofet kol haaretz lo yaseh mishpat," and then when he says, "Will you kill all the tzaddikim in Sodom together with the Rishayim?" and "Hashofet kol haaretz lo yaseh mishpat," these are the kind of questions that Koheles asks. Right? Avraham, Koelis is harsher because Avraham says, Chas v'sholem v'hayoka tzadik karasha, that the tzaddik and the rasha should share the same fate in Sodom. Koheles says in Perek Tes, I see the rasha getting precisely what the tzaddik deserves, and I see the tzaddik getting precisely what the rasha deserves. So it's mamish the opposite, tzaddik v'ra'ala, rasha v'tovlo. So the solution that I would like to render from a diuk in Koheles. Is this possible to get a drink of water? This is so dry. Thank you. The solution I'd like to render from Koheles is a diuk I'd like to make on I think one of the most important psukim in Sefer Koheles, based on a gemara at the end of Sanhedrin, Perek Chelek. And I start with Avraham's claim to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ula yesh hamishim tzadikim besocha ir. Maybe there are 50 tzaddikim in the middle of the city. Ibn Ezra makes a diuk. What does he have to say? Ulai yesh hamishim tzaddikim besocha ir. Just say ulai yesh hamishim tzaddikim sham. God, will you save the whole city on for the sake of those 50? So the diuk on ulai yesh hamishim tzadikim besocha ir. Avram says it's not just enough to have 50 tzadikim there. I want them to be besocha ir. You see the diuk is that because Avram changes direction. At first he says v'hayoka tzadik karasha, you're going to have the tzadik and the rasha share the same fate. It seems from that Avram doesn't mind if you kill all the rishayim. I don't want the Rishayim with stone to live longer so they can kill more innocent people. You can kill all the Rishayim, as far as I care, Avram says. Just don't kill the Tzaddikim with them. Right? That seems to be what Avtispe Tzaddikim Rasha means, right? And then when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives in on that one, then Avram changes the direction of the bargaining. Then he suggests, maybe I can even get the Rishayim to be saved. How? Not just Ulai Yesh Hamishim Tzaddikim Sham. Ulai yesh hamishim tzadikim besocha ir. What's the diuk? That if the tzadikim are mixing it up and they're around besocha ir, maybe just maybe in a year or two or five, I can help them make a difference there. What does this have to do with Koheles? So the mahalach I'm about to take on the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Kof Aleph is a worldview I'd like to share with you about the nature of Koheles. Koheles starts off Havel Havolim Amar Koheles Havel Havim Hakol Hevel. So I told you one reason why Chazal wanted to get rid of this book because it's nota liminus. It's also nota to horrific depression. Right? It's a very pessimistic sefer. So one Koheles Rabbah says, and Ibn Ezra, this is also Ibn Ezra. I'm darshaning Ibn Ezra here. Ibn Ezra says Havel Havolim doesn't mean everything is Hevel. Havel is a tzivui. You get it? It's a tzivui. Havel, the havolim in the world. The world is filled with a lot of havle, a lot of havolim. Make sure, dear human, that you identify the true hevels in the world, the true things that are fleeting and nonsense, and treat them that way. Most people make a big deal out of the nonsense, and they let dvarim shaharom omdim brumo shalolom go by. No. Identify those things. Doesn't say what the percentages are. There are many things lamalam in a shemesh, so don't be trapped into this idea that everything is pessimistic and everything is nonsense. Lots of things are, and treat them that way. So that's that warning. Also, dvarim sotrim ze'etze. A lot of things in Koheles seem to be somewhat contradictory. That's a gemara in Shabbos, the Flamed Aleph. The Gemara says that you can take out your brisker thumb and you say, okay, this is how he treats kaas here under that circumstance. This is how he treats kaas there. And then the simcha is here, simcha, he treats, and within the same sefer, he treats the certain inyanim, mamish's opposites. Seven times he advises his reader to go find something that you enjoy. Echol b'simcha lachmecha is a pasuk in Koheles. Right? Get married, enjoy your life, and build a family. These are all psukim in Koheles. Not that they're going to make these other problems disappear, but it'll make you better capable of dealing with them. So, havel those dvarim shel hevel, And this is the formula. Because the real issue is, I work so hard and it just disappears. What's the point? Can anyone here name something your grandfather's grandfather did, or even his name? Unless he wrote a sefer and was a famous person. So who's going to remember us? How are we going to make our mark? So the very first Targum, just to be sure, the Targumim to Chamesh Megillos, especially Esther, but Kohelis as well, are far, far reaches into Midrashim. If you open up any Mikros Gedolos, Chamesh Megillos that has Targum, you see the Targum is 4, 5, 6 times as big as the Pasuk. Right? See, Mikros Gedolos usually has a Targum. The first Targum to Kohelis starts off with Shlomo evaluates his whole life, everything he did, and it's good, but then he sees, oh my goodness, what? I have all these children and I'm leaving my kingdom to Rehavam, who is going to split my kingdom. And when he saw that his children were in these, took him like this in Kohelis, right? His children don't give him a burial, the children, right? They fight over his money and he splits my kingdom. So when he saw that this kingdom was split and that specifically led to the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, which I just built, Havel Havalim, right? So it's machlekes in Chazal whether Kohelis was written when he was old or when he was younger. Right? It seems that Shir HaShirim is the love of youth, Mishlei is the wisdom of middle age, and Kohelis is the pessimism of old age. But Rashi and Bava Basra, in the listing of the books of Tanakh and Daf Yudal and Beis, he says that Kohelis was written when he was younger. I won't get into the whole mahalach of all this, but what I'd like to point out with this Gemara in Sanhedrin is, like I said, like a world view of how to deal with all of these inconsistencies of life, and the fact that we have such existential problems. Right? Remember, there's a Shimon Lazar looks at all the animals at the end of Kiddushin. He says, "I never saw a fox with a parnasa problem. I never saw a deer with a psychological problem. All these animals, they just do what they're supposed to do, and they do it well, right?" Me, they were all created for me. I have all those problems. Right? So here is out now. I'll let you in the Gemara. The Gemara is where Rabbi Eliezer is sitting on a deathbed or sick bed. He's very, very ill. And his Talmidim are coming to visit him and they're offering him all kinds of sorrowful tears of pain in his suffering. And Rabbi Kiva Kedarga Bakodesh is laughing. He's happy. So Rabbi Eliezer asks for explanation. He says, "Rebbe, I've always seen you succeed in everything you do." Stama, this is before he was put in Chayrim, right? But so he must have improved from this sickness. But I've seen everything you've done was always successful. Your wine never soured. Your investments always went well. Your Torah was perfect. I was always worried that you're eating all your peros in Olam Hazeh. Now that I see you suffering, I'm happy that you're getting rid of some of your punishment in this world, like the Gemara in Brachas and Daf Hei that I told you 10 minutes ago that Kohelis does not want to use, because this is not Torah Tamechkar. You can't prove this. This is just a faith system of ours. That the tzaddik, in general, is always looking to push off joy, right? That's the famous Midrashic difference between Yishmael, who is Mitzachek. Why does that get Sarah so angry? Her son is Yitzchak, after all. And she said, Yitzchak is Yitzchak. Vatizchak li'om acharon. Oz yimol eischok pinu. It's but to push off our satisfaction and our joy. Mitzachek wants it in the moment. No wonder why Esav sought him out as a father-in-law. Because that's exactly what Esav is like. I don't know if it's for tomorrow or for today. Right? The resolution of the that Rabbi Akiva is giving Rabbi Eliezer is fine and good to give to yourself, but the Gemara Bava Metzia specifically says in Daf Nun Ches that to tell someone that he's suffering, it's a Mishnah, that you're suffering for your own sins is onaz devarim. Don't point out a person's own sins. Let the person himself do that. Right? Someone lost his hearing, and you're going to tell him, "Oh, remember that Lashon Hara you heard the other day? That's not a nose for him. You can't tell him that. You want him a pashpesh from Asecha yourself, it's fine. So for a Talmud to talk that way to a Rebbe is outright chutzpah. So what's Rebbe Kiva talking about? right? And furthermore, what the Gemara is not over. The Gemara says that Rabbi Eliezer asked Rabbi Akiva to explain to me what I did in my life to deserve this kind of suffering. All right, good. I'm as happy as anyone to get rid of my avonos in this world. But what did I do to deserve this kind of suffering? This kind of suffering deserves a particularly egregious is a punishment for a particularly egregious sin. Tell me can you identify that? So Rabbi Akiva answers enigmatically, "Imaritenu Rabbeinu, ki adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yechta." It's Kohelas Tes Pasuk Yudbeis. Right. So he says, "You taught us, Rabbi. Everybody sins, so suck it up, Rabbi, and accept it." Right. What's the problem with this? A few problems. One. Assuming that Rabbi Akiva is as clever as any of us, there is a tradition, and it's a Tanaic tradition, that there were four biblical characters who never sinned. Remember who they are? Binyamin, Kilav, Yishai, and Amram. So these are four biblical characters who are all closely related to real, real tzaddikim. I mean, Binyamin or Yosef, you should rather have Yosef on your team, right? Amram or Moshe, Yishai or David, Kilav or Shlomo, come on, who are these four people? And they're particularly known in Chazal as passive, certainly compared to their relatives I just mentioned, right? But I have a diuk in the Gemara. Why did Rabbi Akiva say, "Limadatenu Rabbeinu ki odom ein tzadik ba'aretz"? He should have said, it's a pasuk. He should have said, Rabbi, halok siv, shenemar, right? Halok asuv, right? What is he saying, "Limadatenu Rabbeinu"? You didn't teach us that, Shlomo did. I know that's a nitpicking, but it's still a diuk. So I'd like to suggest that Rabbi Akiva was making a similar diuk that Ibn Ezra made in the pasuk that Avraham said, "Ki adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov lo yechta." If you want to be ba'aretz, you're going to sin. You can be in hiding in a room, you can be on your own and be passive and not take any shots, you don't miss any shots, right? I would strengthen this mahalach with another part of Tanakh that is similar to the Sodom story. If you look in Yirmiyahu Perek Hay starts as follows. Hashem tells Yirmiyahu, "Shotetu bechutzos Yerushalayim, ureuna ude'u." Go out into the streets of Yerushalayim and look and see. If you find me one tzaddik, one mevakesh emunah, and I will save Yerushalayim. So the Radak writes in his parish to that pasuk, evidently Yirmiyahu did not find that tzaddik, historically we know, because Yerushalayim was destroyed. Right? Okay, didn't find the tzaddik. But how do we know that there were tzaddikim and chassidim and avdei Hashem in Yerushalayim? Because if you say Tehillim by the days of the month, right? Tehillim of the 16th day of the month starts off with the ayin tes that speaks of the sacking and the destruction of Yerushalayim. And it says, "Besar avodecha is of Hashemayim," and the bodies of chasidecha, and it refers to the chasidim of Yirei Hashem and the Avdei Hashem of Yerushalayim being laid out. It's obviously a prophetic parak in Tehillim, right? But it talks about the chasidim Yirei Hashem, Avdei Hashem in Yerushalayim at the time of its destruction from Bavel. So why didn't those people get to save Yerushalayim? Now do you have the answer? Because Hashem told Yirmiyahu, "Shotetu bechutzos Yerushalayim." There were thousands of tzaddikim in Israel at the time, but they were passive. They were not bechutzos. There might have been, there may be more than 50 tzaddikim in Sodom, but they're not besocha ir. You can go through your whole life. You can go your whole life without sinning, but you wouldn't be ba'aretz. You wouldn't be ba'aretz, you'd be in a cave. Right? So it's interesting because when the Gemara tells about the four people who never sinned in Shabbos Daf Nun-Vav, it's also in the beginning of Bava Basra, Tosfos asks, how can you go a whole life without sinning? Hi, it says, "Ki adam ein tzadik," right? So Tosfos gives a simpler answer than what I'm giving you here. I'm giving you a diuk in the word ba'aretz. Tosfos just says, it means, Adam ein tzadik means most people sin. You can have some exceptions. Okay. Ayin sham. But this is a different kind of answer. In other words, Koheles speaks to the majority of cases, right? Most times, when you were probably told one day, when it's red, don't cross the light. Cross only when it's green. Why? Because what's going to happen if you cross when it's red? What did someone tell you when you were 3 years old? What's the lashon they might have used? What? A car will hit you. A car will hit you. Not a car might hit you. A car will hit you. And the person who told you that loves you very much and doesn't want the car to hit you. I would submit to you that that's exactly how the Tochacha in the Torah works. In fact, that's exactly how all the Nevi'im speak to us. Kadosh Baruch Hu never wants the Chorban, never wants Shiloh to be destroyed, never wants any of this to happen. Which is precisely why Yirmiyahu sets up the system that says that a promise for a bad Nevuah can always be turned away. Right? It doesn't prove the Navi wrong if he says something's going to happen and it doesn't happen. Abam Yom V'Ninve Ne'apachas. Didn't happen, right? The implicit understanding of the Nevuah is that if you stay with the way you are now, then this is what's going to happen. So the Koheles is sort of like a bad dream. In bad dream, the Gemara in Brachas says, is better for you than a good dream. Because a good dream makes you feel good. Shir Hashirim makes you feel good. Shir Hashirim is much sadder than Koheles. Shir Hashirim is about two people in love who never meet. What can be sadder than that? Right? Bnei Yisrael and Hashem don't end up meeting at the end of the story. So it's very sad. Right? Koheles is a bad dream. It gets you thinking. It gets you saying, you know what? I can be Baritz. I'm going to turn things around. Right? Okay. So now, that's the halacha we're taking. Exactly, and that's based on a pasuk in Koheles. That's a pasuk in Koheles. Why? Because achai yitein el elibo. And it, so, in other words, it's not just because the avel will gain more than the chasen kala will, because you will gain more by going to the base avel, base avel, than to the base mishta. He says you achai yitein elibo. That may be a separate reason also. The Avel may need you more. You know, I mean, the people enjoying life will enjoy without you. The people who are struggling, they may need you more. Okay. All right, so I would like to also point out that while Shir HaShirim tends to stress the Avas Hashem, right, Koheles stresses the Yiras Hashem. Avas Hashem does not appear in our story, in our Sefer. But Yiras Hashem appears seven times, and it ends with Sof Devar Kol Nishma Selukim Yirah. Right. So I'd like to suggest that Yiras Hashem here in Koheles, and I'll use the Rambam's Mahalach. By all means, I can use other Mahalachim in Chazal, but the Rambam's Mahalach is very clear in the Rambam that there are two types of Yiras Hashem. There's Yira Elyona, which is purely intellectual, and the Yira Tachtona, which is emotional, like love, right? The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva says to do the mitzvah set of Yira is the way of Amaratzim, right? It's the way of Tanim, right? Okay, so yet in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah he says that when we contemplate the Maaseh Merkava and the Maaseh Bereishis and the vastness of the universe and how tiny the universe is and how everything is part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan, it leads to a profound, he says, Ava and Yira. How does that lead to a Yira if that's the way of the Amoritz? Okay, so and also the Rambam explains when the early Mishnah is in Pirkei Avos, Al Tu Kavona Mishar Shem Tzal Rav Amonas Lekaba Pras, which he says, don't serve Hashem out of Yira. And he says, "You come on Shalom and ask the Kavras, which is serving Hashem and the Baba." And then the Mishnah continues, "Ve'mor Hashemayim Alech," which has the Rambam essentially explaining the Mishnah: don't serve Hashem and the Yira, serve Hashem and the Baba, but have Mor Hashemayim Alech. So, okay, you can claw that that the it means that the two different things here. One is to have Yiras Shemayim in your head, and there's another thing is to shake a lulav and esrog, either because you're afraid that if you don't, you'll get hit with a lightning bolt. So, the point I'm trying to make though is that when Koheles tells you to have Yira throughout his book, it means that I want you to have an intellectual connection to not just an emotional connection, but an intellectual connection to Hashem. So that when Hashem tells Avraham, Ato yadati ki yarei Elokim ata, v'lo chasachtes binchas yichidcha mimeni. If Avraham is Avraham Ohavai, Avraham the beloved of God, it should say, Ato yadati ki ohev Elokim ata. No, because Avraham did not take his son up to the mountain in a fit of emotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He did it in a fit of intellectual clarity. Okay? That's a separate issue. I would like to... there are a lot of different mahalchim of what the Akedah was. Because the intellectual point is that Avraham recognizes that Hashem in my very meager mind, right? Here's the amoeba, here's us, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu is across the ocean. In my meager mind, Hashem tells me to take... I know Hashem doesn't like murder. I know B'nai Noach were already commanded, he doesn't want murder. He already told me, Ki b'Yitzchok yikorei lechazara, right? And to my knowledge, Yitzchok has no children. So if I take him up to the mountain and do to him what I think HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do, it seems to contradict what Hashem told me, right? But I'm just an amoeba. I don't know. Maybe I'll shecht him and he'll grow back ahead. I don't know. But one thing I do know is that as contradictory as the Kodesh Baruch Hu seems to me, and this is really the key of Koheles, Avram is such an important person in understanding Koheles. As contradictory as everything appears here, and the Sefer becomes contradictory as a result, right? As contradictory as our meager minds have with our existence. I'm going to go up to that mountain and I'm going to do what the Kodesh Baruch Hu expects of me. What's going to happen afterwards? My personal mahalach is that Avraham was certain that he was coming down with his son. He was not lying, like Rashi says when he said, "V'nishtachavev v'nashuv aleichem." That he went up with joy and certainty that Yitzchak is my future. It's not going to be with other children, because Hashem told me Yitzchak yikorei lechazara. Right? Silly me, I don't understand how that fits in with taking him up to the mountain. All right. But that's me. So too, we read Koheles, we're so taken aback by all the contradictions in life, but that's the, we're still Echo B'Simcha Lachmecha, and you'll be able to deal with this. Behave like Avraham. Do that next mitzvah. Okay? It's a safer, profound Yiras Shemayim. Okay. So here in Perek Aleph, there's a theme of Ein Chadosh Tachas HaShemesh. Things just keep going around and further. And this, so, and he mentions three different types of motion. He mentions the movements of man, the movements of the spheres, the stars, and the movements of the water. It's really quite fascinating. How Koheles was read in the ancient world. I would consider that Koheles and Mishlei, these were not just books that Jews read. I think these books had wide circulation. And these three famous motion of man, the motion of the heavenly bodies, the motion of water, there's a very famous dispute in Greek philosophy between Heraclitus and Parmenides about the nature of what we perceive, known as the epistemological theory of how our brain perceives what's happening before us. Right? Have you heard of Zeno's paradoxes? No. Okay, so it's if I can prove this, it's a doctorate, you know, right? But I think that these philosophers were aware of Perek Aleph, of Koheles, and he's dealing with what's new in life? What can we mechadesh? And what he's entertaining Perek by Perek are the possibilities of what because what he means is that, like, there's a saying, if you don't question your belief in the Kodesh Baruch Hu, you won't come to a full emuna shleima. Right? When you go to the gym, you're breaking down your muscle tissue first, then it gets stronger. So you have to break down the discussions and the theories, and then come to the fact that there is plenty of Chodesh Tachas HaShemesh, which is of course the conclusion of the book. Right? So along the way, such as Perek Bet, he deals with hedonism. It's an amazing point. Why do this? Why bother? He tells you why he bothers. Right? Practically the whole Perek Beis is about him trying to make himself find meaning in his life with his vast wealth. And by the way, you can do every single one he mentions, the streams and the pools and the gardens, and you can find them all in Malachim Aleph. They're all there. Okay? Now it says in Koheles why he did this. He says, "Umi yachush yoser mimeni." He wanted to make sure that no one else should ever say, "Yeah, but that was just Koheles. I'm richer than Koheles. I'm going to try to see if I can find joy and happiness and meaning in life through personal, you know, through $160 billion of enjoyment." Right? Is that going to make you feel better? Don't try, because Shlomo couldn't find it that way, so you don't have to. He did it for you. Gee, thanks. Okay? However, one gets the sense in Malachim Aleph that he went overboard. He went overboard in three things. They spell the word kisei: kesef, susim, isha. Right? The three things the Torah tells you to stay away from. In Sanhedrin, you know, in the second paragraph, they talk about how could outsmart the reasons the Torah gives. So here I'll just tell you the Malbim's introduction to Shir Hashirim. At the end of in Sefer Malachim, it says that Shlomo wrote 3,000 parables and 1,005 songs. What? Who would write about 1,005 songs? Isn't 1,000 good enough? And you think exactly 3,000 parables? Why did you round off the parables but not the songs? 1,005 songs? At the end of Koheles, do you see the pasuk Elef Lecha Shlomo? Shlomo Kluger is Shuvus, you know, his name. So Elef Lecha Shlomo. So what's going on here? So the Malbim in his Akdama to Shir Hashirim says something amazing. He says, you know, there are 8 prakim in Shir Hashirim that you know, if you open the Tanakh, but those prakim were made by Christians. It's a goyish breakdown of the Tanakh in prakim. A bishop in the Middle Ages broke down the prakim. I'm so sorry. Yeah, please. Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, I'll schmooze a little before he goes back to the front. But and the 3,000 parables are not the fullness of Sefer Mishlei. Mishlei does not have 3,000 psukim in it. Nowhere near it. Okay, so not even 1,000 psukim in Mishlei. So what is 3,000 parables? So there's much more than. Okay, I understand. 1,005 songs. Those are not all in Shir Hashirim, I assure you. Okay, so this is what the Malbim says about. So the 5 songs are there are 5 parts of Shir Hashirim. 5 different sections of Shir Hashirim, not 8 but 5. And each one has an oath. 3 are the exact same that you know in the end of Ksuvos, the Shalosh Shvuos. You familiar with that? But there are actually 5 places where he takes an oath. And the Malbim says that the 3 that begins with Yishpati and the very end, which is Brach Dodi. So he says that they correspond to the 5 times that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Shlomo. It's very interesting because when Hashem speaks to all the other Malachim, Hashem speaks to Shaul through Shmuel, he speaks to David through God, Ve'emer David al God, Talimod, or through Nason HaNavi. But it's amazing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks directly to Shlomo 5 times. Not through any Navi. And the Malbim shows how each one of those discussions relate to these 5. That's why it's 1,005 songs. 1,000, that's in Koheles, Ha'elef L'Chashlomo. And the 5 is Shir Hashirim. best, you know, shir of all the shir. Okay, so, but the last one, the last time HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Shlomo, has a lot of negativity in it. And you turned away from me, and the turning away from Hashem was in what Perek Beis is all about. Is you there was such an enormity of ostentation. You almost feel at the end of Shlomo's life that you're sitting in Ahasuerus's court. The ostentation is just too so. It's the Torah has the Tanakh has an exaggeration almost when it says that they threw silver out in the street like rocks. Oh, this is not gold. This is silver. Get this out of here. They threw it out. Right. So that type of ostentation is what is Perek Beis. Then Perek Gimel comes along, and that's what it says, Ace, a time for this, right? So this is an amazing, I want to share with you an amazing drusha made by Rav Shaul Nathanson. You know the guy, that's the Divrei Shaul. Shaul Meshiv, you know, right? So he wrote a drusha. I can figure out the exact year. I think it's 1867. He made a drusha on a Birkas HaChama. Right? Every 28 years there's a Birkas HaChama. And he made a drusha that is Mivusas on Koheles Perek Gimel. And he touches upon the halacha in between that Magen Avraham's psak that you have to say Birkas HaChama before Sof Zman Kriyat Shema. Meir Timtzer, Gemara never says anything that this is man. I remember doing it twice, and we did it at the Mamashet Vasikin. Right? Why should we wait till Sof Zman Kriyat Shema? We did it Vasikin. And if maybe it's better even to do it at Chatzos, the sun high in the sky, for all to see. Right? All right, but come, you know, whatever it may be, what does it have to do with Sof Zman Kriyat Shema? Right? So if you look in the third in the first parak in Brachas, so the Gemara says that Sof Zman Kriyat Shema is because at this hour, the Malchei Ha'umos get up and they bow to the sun, because they're lazy, they, you know, this is of Kumecha now, they're the last ones to get up in the whole world, right? And they bow to the sun, and it's an ace, you know, to resicha. Hashem is angry at that time, but then he sees, oh, look at all the yidden. They're saying Kriyat Shema. Okay, they're saving the world. So what does that do with Birkas HaChama? So he says that if you look in Koheles Perek Gimel, there's a whole series of times with 14 pairs. It's not, and sometimes it's a good one first, sometimes it's a good one last, but there's 14 pairs. And he says that what Koheles is trying to teach us in Perek Gimel is to take charge of time. Time withers all. It's going to do to all of us what it's done to everyone before us. Right? And the key to, and this is the point of Koheles, is the key to find a meaning in life. The key to find the most meaningful living situation is to make peace when peace should be made, and to make war when war should be made. The first act of World War II is when Neville Chamberlain said, we'll have peace in our time. If it's an ace milchama, and you try to make shalom, that shalom is a profound act of war. This is debilitating. No doubt. How can I be sure? I'm not a Navi. I've got to do your best research, right? You have to. Don't just be impetuous. You have to go and make sure that when it's a time of knows, it's a time of, you have to know which is which, right? But he says the 14 pairs, they add up to 28 because of to indicate a 28-year cycle of the sun, right? So, the Kli Yakar says something like this, a little like this, on the pasuk Vayir Vaybaku Yom Echad, and also on the fourth day. Remember, Rashi says that the Vehim Oros that's missing the Vavs, because if a child is born on Wednesday, it's a Me'eras Ksiv, and you should pray, right? Oh, yeah. I have the whole Chumash here. And you should pray for that the children don't die on Wednesday. Right? I'll just read it very quickly. Tzizimhi Moros. Choser Vov Ksiv al Shehu Yom Me'era Lipol Askira Bitinokos. Hu Sheshoninu Bedalhi Misanin al Askira Shloti Pol Bitinokos. Really? Anyone here, you know, if you're born on a Wednesday? Really? Is it such a curse to be born on a Wednesday? What is that? So that is the Kli Yikaros says on the Wednesday Pasuk Yimaros, he says he plugs this into the 28 times as well, that the sun is a daily reminder of the passage of time. And it's a daily reminder that we can, through our saying of Kriyat Shema, based on the position of the sun, where they bow down to the sun, I'm looking at the sun and saying, Birkas Hacham, Chas V'Shalom, it's all it is a, it's just a it's put in the sky that many other people have worshipped, it's put in the sky to teach us about how to do our mitzvahs. The mitzvahs that can only be done by day, but that it's take grab time and make it meaningful with the mitzvah, the daytime mitzvah, the nighttime mitzvah. You use the sun and the moon and the mahalchim of the sky, not the way they were using it. It goes the days pass in one day and nothing is new under the sun. It's just to show that all these times are should be harnessed by you. Use time as your friend. Right, an hour goes away very quickly when you're Bevat al Zman. But if you're making the time mean something and make it meaningful, this is the Divrei Shaul's message that he gave on that Birkas Hachama. Right? And if you have a chance to take a look at the Kli Yikar over why being born on a Wednesday is such a day of the Meiras Ksiv. It's very cryptic in the Rashi. But you need Perushim to Rashi and the Kli Yikar does that, and it's a shame you can look that up as well. Okay, so it's at the end of Perek Gimel where the Koheles says, well, let's take a look at it now, because this is where the Meiri says that it's because of these psukim that Chazal felt that the book shouldn't be in Tanakh. Right? This is where he talks about the difference between the animal and the human. Right? You know the what we say in the morning, Mosar ha'adom mina behema ayin ki akol havel, right? It all comes from here, right? So you can see, look at pasuk yutes. See, gimel yutes ki mikre v'nei adam mikre v'abehema mikre echod lahem ki mozeh kein mozeh v'ruch echod lakol mosar ha'adom mina behema ayin ki akol havel. Of course, gashmis and ruchnis. The problem is that this book doesn't speak to the guarantee of Ruchnius, because how can you guarantee it if it's not the Torah Tamechkar? That's the Meiri's Lashon. The Koheles does not rest upon the guarantee that the Gemara, the Chazal give us, Kol Yisrael Yeshlam Chet Golam Haba, right? That it's not a blanket statement made in Koheles. Until you may think at the very end when it says Sof Dorah Kol Nishma Sof Kim Yiro, right? So if I can just give you, because I always, there was a Rebbe at YU, his name was Rav Shatzkis. He used to find the silver lining in even all of the Tochacha and Devarim and Vayikra. I mean, she sometimes tries at the end of Vayikra. So one time we challenged him, and he said, Rebbe, it says, V'chaltim es besar b'neichem, v'es besar b'noseichem tochil, you'll eat your children's flesh. Where is the silver lining in that? So he said, I'll tell you very easily. When I came to America in the 20s, we came with our children and we were Rabin Vagam Shleimim, and so many of my colleagues, their children quickly went off the derech. How many great Rashi Yeshiva had children that didn't follow in the derech? Right? We'd be torn apart by that. They had four kids, two, didn't go and stay on the derech. So it's a promise from the Kodesh Baruch Hu. V'achaltim is besar b'neichem. You can go to your son's house and eat the basar in the house. You can go to your daughter and eat her the basar. It's besar b'noseichem tochelu. It's a direct. It's a promise in the Torah, right? So, you know that you can always look at so mosar hadomin habehema oyin. If you want to know what is the yisron of a behema over a person, yisron of a person over a behema is oyin. Mosar hadomin habehema what? Oyin, because a behema doesn't know how to say no. If you put food in front of a dog, he'll eat until he throws it up, and like it says in Mishlei, Hashav El Keo, then he'll eat that too. Right? He only stops eating when there's no food left. We, you know, some people behave that way too. It is gluttonous. But we do know how to say no. In fact, one can argue that what I started saying before about pushing off our pleasures for a later time, Yitzchok, right? That's gufa, the way we raise our children. That they learn how to say, oh no, you can't eat that. It's not kosher. Right? You all have young children. If they have a tantrum, the tantrum always goes on until they feel they're going to get what the tantrum is about. At two, they're smart enough to recognize when that tantrum is not getting them what they're going to want. And when that happens, the tantrum ends. They can have a tantrum that they want to have this ice cream. I have to have this ice cream. I always want. And you tell them, you can't have ice cream. You just had a Frankfurter a half hour ago. Your filet shakes. At two years old, they know that. Filet shakes is not negotiable in our house. Sometimes I'll let you have a lollipop before dinner. Yeah, sometimes I can give in on a lollipop. But we're never giving in on filet shakes in our family. Never. So don't bother. And, oh, you're right. I forgot I'm fleshik. So I forgot. So umosara domine behema oyin. If you really want to get a head start, because at some point it's too late to start teaching them no. Right? If they learn first and foremost, right? They're in the supermarket. Now here, you probably, when you shop, it's only kosher food. But you know, in America, you can go shopping in a big store. And there's unkosher food. Your kids say, "Oh, I want that. That looks good. I want that." Can't have that. Why not? I want to be serving the tantrum. It's not kosher. Oh, kosher is not negotiable in our house. Right? So the key is to not expose your children to things that they think that they either can have or should have when they shouldn't have it. That's an important point also. But that's a very, very important pasuk here at the end of Gimel. Okay. All right. So the Perek Dalid. Yeah, that's where I started. I started with this pasuk. Who knows if the person? Yeah, so that's the pasuk that the Meiri says. But he means who can prove this? Yeah, anyone? All I can tell you is Yismach Adam b'Maasav. Stay happy so that you can deal with these sfeikos. And that's what the Meiri said. I would like to move to Perek Dalid. Now I'm really taking things in a larger view. Is he speaks about the Ashukim. It pains me to see all the pain. And your world should be like Avram expected it. It should be Tov for the Tzaddikim. So I would like to use that. This is Perek Dalid. I'm using the Christian, delineation here. But to remind you of Perek Dalid and Sefer Bereishis. Perek Dalid is the story of Cain in heaven. And if you do have young children, I'm already at two or three. They have a keen sense. Maybe it starts off as a selfish sense, but they have a keen sense of what's fair and what's not fair. You know what I'm saying? Well, it's not fair that he gets two pieces of licorice and I just get one. It's not fair that he gets to stay up later. So good parents try to, work these things through and to teach why we're doing what we're doing. Right? It's Tzadik V'Ra'al of Rosh HaVotovel is not fair. So the first person to speak that way would appear to be Cain. Right? Cain gets depressed because I thought of this first, right? He just follows me, Hevelevi Gamhu, and he gets all the respect. That's a classical, that's not fair, right? So Rashi says, because it says, Mibachoros Tzono Mechel Behen, and here he just brings me Priyadamo. Okay. In terms of sacrifice, but that's not what Korban means. In terms of sacrifice, one can argue that Cain's sacrifice was greater because he gave at least what he was using. They weren't eating, you know, they weren't eating meat. And by saying Mibachoros Tzono Umechel Behen, if the pasuk had just said Mibachoros Tzono, wouldn't that include the chaylev? Why would I think it doesn't include the chaylev? Maybe to teach, I mean, there's maybe a little limbus for what's going to be written later in the Torah. We put chaylev on the Mizbeach with dam, even though we don't eat that. So Hevel can put a korban on the Mizbeach, even though he's not eating it. You get it? So that's why it says, Mibachorotzon u'mechel behen. Because kind of, what kind of carbon are you bringing God? You don't eat that. We're not eating that. Why are you giving him? It's Mamashke Yisrael. We're not eating this. What are you giving him? We're not eating. What kind of sacrifice is that? Right?
He wasn't eating the meat either.
So there's a Maamar Chazal that says that, you know, that Cain brought flax and he brought the wool from him. But one might surmise, though, that if it says Michel Behen, it's Michel Behen la'afuke, the tzemer. Why should I give God tzemer? I use tzemer. I'm going to give God what I use. I'll give him the chaylev. I'll give him the meat, but I'm not going to. Why should I give him the... So if it's possible that Cain's looking at all this and saying, Ribono Shel Olam, this just gets me angrier. Why does he get all the respect and not me? Setting off a trend of younger brothers outdoing their older brothers and Sefer Bereishis. And tragically, older brothers not dealing well with it. Right? So, I'd like to suggest to you that Hevel is not blameless in this story. Because when it says, Vayomer Kain al Hevel Achiv, Vayibio Sam Basadevek, and Kain al Hevel Achiv, Vayogehu. Right? It doesn't say what was said. Rashi says, Amayu Medainin. If you look in Bereishis Rabbah, it says they fought over three things. Right? Right? So I think that it's very possible that Hashem told Cain, I want you to try harder. And he did. He went over to Hevel and said, Hevel, what did you do? What did you do to succeed? It's not easy for me to ask you this. I started and you did better than me. Now I'd like to know, what did you do? So why does the pasuk say nothing? Because Hevel didn't answer. I don't give my secrets away. Right? But you see, it's very possible. I didn't see this in any of the Mefarshim. Tell me if you think this is a good mahalach. But there's a limud on this for Kohelis Perek Dalet. Is that the real problem with Cain? Is that when he woke up one day to say, you know, I need a Kaddish Baruch Hu for my flax or whatever I grow to work. Right? The earth has been cursed by my parents, but I see that it grows better when I reach out to be Reif Gaba Makom. So let me give something back. It's a nice thought, right? But he did something tragically wrong that day. It's a beautiful thought to give back to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Meister Mikol. Let me give back some what if he gives me. What was tragically wrong that day, though? What did he not do that day? He didn't go to his younger brother and say, listen, Hevel, you're a shepherd, I'm a farmer. We both need a Kaddish Baruch Hu for our bounty. Why don't you bring some of your animals, I'll bring some of my fruits, and we'll both thank God together. Why didn't he include his brother? That's the problem. You hear it? Had he gone to Hevel, Hevel would have looked at his carpet and said, don't bring that. That's just, I mean, Babi Yadcha, what are you doing? Don't bring that. That's not good. Hear how different world history could have been had Cain brought in his brother to bring the carbon together with him. He would have taught him how to bring a better carbon, and they would have both been accepted. All of Sefer Bereishis would be different. Right? This is Ramban myself.
You always see that someone brings a carbon. No, he tells us someone brings a carbon. Who brings about himself a carbon? We don't find that someone else has to bring together.
Yeah, okay. Father who brings it for his three children, but Cain instituted a competitive spirit that was not helpful. Competition is necessary to put out a good product, but sometimes it doesn't bring out the best in people. So in fact, it made a person kill someone early on in the Torah. But when Hevel doesn't answer, so it says, was the question, was the answer? No, nothing was said. Because Hevel said, you didn't want to bring me in. Well, guess what? I'm not bringing you in now. All right? It's a new mahalach. It's not, you don't find this in the Mefarshim, but this is what I'd say Perek Daled is about in Koheles. He speaks about the unfairness, the ashukim, the people being abused and amichram b'kesef tzadik ve'avion b'avun alayim. People being abused, and that just doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem like the kind of world the Kaddish Baruch Hu wanted. Right? I just quoted the pasuk in Amos about what the sin that caused Ashlosha Pishei Yisrael, that Chazal connect to Mechiras Yosef. So this is how Perek Daled moves. And the end of Perek Daled, very fascinating dichotomy in the Midrashim. Take a look at Pasuk Yud Gimel. Tov yeled miskein v'chacham mimelech zoken uksil asher lo yada li hizohero. Better is a child who's always in sakana, but he's a chacham, from an old king who's a fool, who's not in charge anymore, he doesn't have to be careful anymore. The young child ended up becoming king, even though he was born into poverty, he was born into a poor family, he's not the son of a king. Right? And then he warns everybody at the end, he says, Pasuk Yud Zayin, Shmor rag l'cho kasher tilecha beso elokim, v'karov lishmo mites aksilim zevach ki einam yodim lasos ra. He warns people to guard themselves. Make sure you go to the house of God and guard yourself as you go there. What's going on? So the Koheles Rabbah connects this to a king and someone he is pursuing. So on the face of it looks like Shaul and David. Shaul is the king, a Shaloya Dali is a herod, and David is this yellow miskain that he's chasing who ends up being king. No. It's Shlomo and Yeravam ben Nevat. Remember the first Targum I shared with you a while back? With Rechavam, his son who splits the kingdom? It's because of Yeravam ben Nevat. But Yeravam ben Nevat only existed because of Shlomo's own excesses. Yeravam ben Nevat is simply a creation of Shlomo's excesses. Achia Shiloni would never have crowned him king if not for these excesses. So what's interesting is one of the first things Yeravam ben Nevat does is that he shuts off the travel routes to Yerushalayim. He builds two shrines in Dan and Beit El, right, and he cuts off and he builds a wall that no one can go aliyah leregel and then become subjects of Rechavam. Right? So he says, he's as if though he's prophetic. I'm the king, lo yadali zoher. He's the yelet miskein, and I can see what's going to happen if this kingdom gets split. Who's going to come to Yerushalayim to this big house I just built? So shmorag l'chok, right? He's like warning the people, make sure that you go to the...
I would say to Toby, Toby and Miskin L'chacham.
You say your Chacham
is
Toby
and
Miskin L'chacham? No, Toby Miskin L'chacham is... it's just a parable, but even someone who is in Sakana, who ends up becoming king himself, who's not for the son of a king, is better than this Melech Zokein Uksil, who is losing.
That's
his slow. Yeah, he's writing about himself. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So In Perek Hey is an Ibn Ezra, a very long Ibn Ezra. It takes over the whole page and the back page also. If you look in the Makros Gedolos, where he talks about Al Tavahel Al Picha V'Libcha, meaning don't speak more, don't speak too much. And he raises the discussion of Piyutim, which is interesting because Ibn Ezra himself was a great Paitan, and he. But he speaks, he chooses his parish, the Koheles, to discuss. He does this a lot. He starts off Amar Avraham HaMechaber. In about 50 places in his parish Al HaTorah, he gets off in these long tangents, especially in Sefer Shmos, and he picks on a topic. He probably should have put all 50 of them in one separate book and call it something like Mor Nevuchim or something. And instead, he just, you know, puts it into his parish. But this parak talks quite a bit about the trouble we get into with our mouth, with our impetuosity. It talks about Nadarim in this parak, and so you know, you never saw a fish on the wall with his mouth shut, if you know what I'm saying. The mouth gets us into a lot of trouble that we, and if we give time to think things over, it'll put us in a better place. So that's what Nadarim is, quite a big inyan in the middle of this parak, and the beginning of the Seches Cholin, if you're following the daf now. Actually, Darshan is a few psukim from this parak, where the mayor comes to the conclusion it's better not to make a neder at all than even to make it and keep it. Right? Certainly make it and not keep. All right, so, there is some discussion here about some musar or hiv kesef, lo yispa kesef. Okay, I'm moving now to parak vav, and there's a few series of psukim in Perek Vav that I'd like to figure out. How can we give mitzias to these psukim? It says pasuk gimel, im yolid ish mea, person has 100 children, v'shanim rabos yichya, and he lives many years. Sounds like he has a good life. He leaves behind 100 children. Does he have 12 wives? 100 children. That's, let's say, 100 descendants. Right? You see those, some, you know, sometimes you see a person with a Sheva Brachas of his grandchild. Now all the family members gather together and you see this amazing long big picture. Right? Wonderful. What a wonderful life he must have had. Right? For Rav Shiri Yimei Shanav and Avshol Lo Tispa Min HaTova. But he did not have Sviya Tova. He didn't enjoy the end of his life. V'gam Kfura Lo Haysalo. And he didn't even have a burial. 100 children and they didn't bury him. What? Huh? Amarti told me menu hanafel. Better to have been stillborn than to live such a life. Keep a heva ba v'choshech ilich v'choshech lo yichuse. Gam shemesh lo ravi lo yodan nachas lo zemize. Right? What? Who has 100 children and doesn't get a burial? Why is he talking about things that just don't have a mitzvah? I know in Chazal and the Gemara's talk about cases that might never have happened. There's that big mission at the end of Yevamos with those 40 marriages. Not one has ever happened in the whole history of the world. Right? The Friedrich Rebbe says that it's just that we want to have the answer ready just in case. When you're in love with someone, you always like to look for all the most amazing cases. Remember, Rav Yirmiyah asks in Maseches Vachim, what happens if after you sprinkle the... You do the zrika before it hits the mizbeach, his hand is cut off. Does that mean that someone without a hand did the zrika, since it didn't reach the mizbeach before? He didn't. By the time it reached the mizbeach, now come on. Well, who asks such a question? Rav Yirmiyah seems to ask those kind of questions. He's good at this. That's why he gets kicked out of the shir with the two fingers. The two legs of the bird, in Dafchav Gimel and Bava Basra. All right, so what's happening here? So I think what's here is that Koheles is very much concerned with what's happening after we die. What's happening? Who's assured? I'm not here to assure that what I lived for is being promulgated and is continued. What's happening there? So what does it mean for a man not to get a kfura? So it can take many forms. It's the first targum. the person leaves this world and he's not sure, are these children going to tell the next generation to pursue the goals I put set out for them? That's you know, are they going to fight over my will? Right, that's a big one. Right, is it going to be a fight in the family over what I want to have happen? Does a person adequately express what that will is supposed to be? Right. Okay, I think this might be this is six prakim maybe. This is taking you pretty late already. Okay, Chavra, this will cover two classes. All right. Okay. I'll see you next week. Okay.